It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hey guys, Rick here from the Mobile Hunter Podcast, and I'm here to tell you about one of our sponsors, Saddy's LLC, Custom Ammunition and Gun Works. Aaron Satterfield and his family have been turning out some awesome game loads that have been putting down deer, waterfowl, and turkey all year long. The Saddy's Fatty, the turkey load that we use, can stop a bird dead in its tracks. Check them out at SattiesLLC.com. That's SattiesLLC.com. Or on Facebook at Satties LLC and tell them the Mobile Hunter Podcast sent you.
Welcome to the Mobile Hunter Podcast. Our mission is simple. We want to help you become a better hunter. We believe that mobility kills and efficiency will set you free.
Welcome to the Mobile Hunter Podcast. We're your hosts, Rick Cates, Chris Leppert, and Josh Luck.
What up, everyone?
And this is our final week of Turkey Talk for all of you listening. You've made it this far.
We have a few listeners that are just jumping for joy right now.
Stay strong, Tyler Jones.
So, as you're listening to this, we will be bringing back whitetail content next week. So be ready for it. It's getting into, it's getting into starting summer scouting-ish. Still a little early, but everyone's been out in the woods for turkey, or the people who have been turkey hunting, and we've all been noticing deer sign. We've all been looking for it while we've been out there, while we're tracking birds. So it should be a great start to your whitetail year. However, like I said, we have one more week to talk birds. And as of today, Mr. Chris, you tagged out in Ohio, correct?
Yeah. This really isn't going to be a super long podcast, guys. wasn't a lot to it. It's more about what I would call prep work. and a little bit of grit and stupidity. So I'll just kind of dive right into it.
Let's do.
This was kind of similar to the way I like to deer hunt, so it was kind of cool. Turkeys bring me a lot of joy when they gobble, but some years you struggle to hear a gobble on the limb or, you know, after fly down. And I've heard a lot of people struggling in Kentucky, myself included. Yeah. I'd heard just all kinds of struggles here within our region, we'll say.
Yes.
So birds just weren't really talking much. When I was going out to roost birds in a lot of places and just scout, I was seeing a decent amount of birds, but I wasn't hearing anything. So I set up some trail cameras and got a few pics of birds and thought, you know what? We're going to go here and just listen. And so I did what I always do and woke up uber early, took my coffee with me and kayaked to a spot and just listened. And wouldn't you know it, there were birds gobbling really well.
Mm-hmm.
Right where I figured they would be and right where I would want them to be. And so I kind of went up and marked, you know, a few spots to sit and just kind of eased around and just made sure I understood how the birds were moving and what things were going on. And, you know, you can only do so much with a turkey. Deer are tougher and easier in a sense to pattern, because a turkey will do the same thing for like 2 weeks straight, and then the day you go in to kill them, they won't. So leads us to opening day in Ohio, I got up at 2 a.m., kayaked in, got set up around 4, walked directly to where I felt like they would be roosted. Now, do I know the exact tree? No. But within probably a 5-ish acre area, I figured there'd be a bird roosted there. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think I would be very far at all. I figured I'd be sub 100 yards all day. Well, I walked in with my flashlight. That's my, what I call like uber aggressive roost tactics. And I know there's some people that think you should only just go out and, you know, try to get 100 yards away from a roost or whatever. You might call it fair, you might not. I did my groundwork and I slipped in there like a damn stealth lord or something. Like, it was crazy. So I moved really slow, and my theory is that you could have a car's headlight on your head. It could be as bright as you want it. As long as you don't make noise, the birds are asleep. So you can walk right in there, set up whatever you need to set up, decoys, you know, stake blind, ground blind, whatever you need to do. As long as you don't wake those birds up, you're golden. So I went in, got set up. I used a DSD strutter and a bedded hen, a breeder hen, put her under him. I normally like to attach a fishing line to the strutter and kind of run it from the post where the Jake fan goes on all the way around the opposite side of the bird to where I'm sitting. I'll put like a stick in the ground and then loop that line around it and run it back to the post. So that way you can pull on one side or the other and it'll turn him and make him kind of look like a strutter. But that's more of a tactic for like farmland, agland birds. It's kind of like turning a turkey decoy into a mojo duck decoy. You add that motion and it brings them in. Well, because you can be a great turkey caller all you want. If they can't see something 300 yards away, they have no reason to come over to the edge of the field. So I got in there, got my decoy set up probably by 4:30, we'll say. And I turned my light off and sat down, kind of closed my eyes for a little bit, drank some coffee. And about 40 minutes before daylight, I hear. And at first, for those that are autistic like me and pay attention to every little detail, wrens can make a noise that kind of sounds similar to that. It also sounds similar to like leaves being scratched or something. Mm-hmm. You know, they can often make you think that there's a deer coming in November. They piss me off. So I'm sitting there listening and it just kept going, you know, with about the same amount of time in between. So I thought, man, you better hold on to your britches, dude. You're about to get the shit scared out of you. And it was probably about 10 minutes before daylight. And the first roar was let out by one of the birds. And, you know, it was a wake up gobble. And it's so funny because you hear the first one and then all the turkeys are awake. It's so weird. There were hens in the trees and everything carrying on. And I got some pretty good footage, both with my phone and my camera, of the gobbling, you know, good audio. And to kind of help you guys understand, the birds were roosted directly overhead, offset behind me. I'm not sure that the birds were 20 yards away from me. So if that gives you any indication of how quiet I was. So, Josh, are you sleeping?
Okay. I was reading.
He put his head down in a weird motion, and I was like, damn. Okay. Okay. Let's set up 100.
I was reading something on my phone.
So, so these birds are carrying on, and I'm like, damn it, man. Like, you want to be close, but damn, come on. And the whole time I'm cussing myself because literally, if I'm at 6 o'clock, 12 o'clock of me was the perfect tree. I could have sat there, pointed my camera 180 degrees from where I was, and everything would have been perfectly on film. I wouldn't, you know, when you're waking up with the woods trying to turn your camera on, that light is very evident when it's dark out.
That so is.
I'm like flipping my little screen on the camera, trying to angle it away from them as best I can. And so I just hit record, said, well, hopefully somebody walks in front of me in the next 30 or 40 minutes or whatever. I don't know how long this battery is going to last, but wasn't long after, I heard wing beats and a turkey pitched down. Now, I thought that bird pitched down like well behind me, like from well behind me and pitched down in front of me. I thought he came from probably like 4 o'clock of me, we'll say. But of course, like an asshole, he's to my right. Anybody that can sit there and think about it, you always want a bird or whatever to your left, and he lands to my right. And I was like, oh, man, come on. So I'm thinking, okay, you know, and he lands 3 or 4 steps from the decoys. He's 12 yards from me. And later when I checked the footage, he basically just pitched straight down out of the tree and came down directly down like a helicopter. It's pretty cool to watch, actually. The bird moves away from me to my right, and he didn't really look. He wasn't spooked, and his buddies were pitching down all over. You can hear in the video, there's, you know, whatever, gobblers, hens. There are multiple gobblers roosted together. There's hens roosted not far away, and the hens were uphill of me, and I was like, well, I know what this means. You know, she's going to be up there, and she's probably not going to come down here. And if she starts calling, he'll go uphill. He's not going to come downhill. So I decided to just make a super aggressive move, and I shifted my body and swung hard to the right and got the red dot on him and pulled the trigger. And my Ohio turkey season was 45 seconds long. So
that's awesome, man.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really proud of it from a scouting standpoint and developing my very own tactic. I'm not saying people don't do it, but I'd never heard of people basically bed hunting turkeys. And you know, I had actually learned this when me, Luke, Aaron, and Matt went out to a place turkey hunting opening day. We hadn't scouted, and we got in where I had had success with Pierce and Luke before. And we just sat there and figured we'd, you know, wait for the birds to gobble and hopefully be able to strike a few and get on them. Well, we accidentally set up directly in the middle of 3 gobblers, the farthest being probably 90 to 100 yards and the others being like 60 and 70. So it really worked out. And Luke almost blew Matt's face off. We've got pictures of that where Matt's covering his face and we're all like watching the video, like, what did you think you were going to do? Block the 12 gauge. So he didn't really almost blow his face off, but it was minorly sketchy, we'll call it. So we were laying there for hours joking and kind of loudly whispering. We were all on our phones and those birds were not affected. Well, I had found a place with Pierce in Kentucky where birds, every time I went there, birds were roosted there. So I was like, hey, Josh, let's go see if those birds are roosted there. You know, this is last year. If they are, we know what we'll do. And sure enough, they're roosted there. And I blew it. We set up underneath these birds, basically, Josh in one spot, me in another. Josh did his job and shot his bird 20 minutes into the season. And mine, probably 4 minutes into the season, I missed it like a douchebag. So I thought, man, what a what a cool thing to kind of develop my own little tactic or whatever, and then put it to use this year. And talk about efficiency. Now, I will say, this is not what I would call my ideal turkey hunt. This is a get a bird on the ground in a state that you feel like you're probably going to struggle in, so you can go to another state kind of deal. I probably honestly wouldn't have hunted that way if I only hunted Ohio and I had a full 4-week season to get it done, just because I really enjoy the aspect of calling a bird in. It's really cool. But sometimes you're not going to call a bird in. I mean, you could try all season long and not call one in. So at the end of the day, I'm freaking jacked that I got a nice turkey. And, you know, got some really cool footage. Got, you know, we've got obviously content, but I did things my own way, developed my own plan, and really executed it nearly to perfection. And when I say nearly to perfection, I think I could have had everything on film. I could have had birds strutting on a limb and gobbling on the limb on film. And then I could have went with my season lasting 45 seconds to less than 5 seconds. So, you know, splitting hairs, but pretty cool. Since then, I've been to Indiana and Kentucky, pretty much got my ass whipped, and hoping I can pull a bird or two out of my butt this weekend, because we close Kentucky and then the following weekend, Indiana closes. A lot of short turkey seasons.
Yeah, I'll say this. I'm proud of you for doing that this year the way you did in Ohio, because with Kentucky last year, like, you missed what, twice?
Yeah.
And I mean, in
very
those
birds, easy shot too.
Well, I know, like right off the roost, right to you. And this year it was, I'm going to put a bird down. I'm not going to think about it. I'm just going to get the bird down. Because I think a lot of times people get too in their head about, do I got to do this? I got to do that. And it's like, yeah, if the bird is there and it's a bird that you will be happy with, shoot it.
Yeah.
Shoot it in its face.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I went to Texas and got a bird down and all that, but Rio turkeys can make you feel like the god of turkey hunting so easily. Let me tell you a little story.
They all roost in the same tree.
Well, so our boy Austin Crutchfield.
Yes.
To have him on to talk about this a little bit. Just a segment, and then we can roll into deer maybe next week or something. Homeboy Drew Kansas drove, I want to say, like 10 or 12 hours to Kansas mm-hmm. yesterday.
Yep.
Killed a bird the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, I saw that. Beautiful pictures.
Yeah.
Beautiful pictures.
I was wondering, like, man, where the hell are you, man? I didn't realize Arkansas was that pretty. And so he called me today and was telling me that. And I'm like, oh my God, are you kidding me? That was super cool. And, you know, he's like, Rios, you know, they're little dum-dums. And so, you know, I got that Rio on the ground and kind of had it in my head like, okay, you know, I'm going to call these birds in this year and blah, blah, blah. And then you really get kicked in the teeth with reality that you're hunting Easterns that see pressure. I'm not on a Texas ranch with never before hunted Rio idiot turkeys. I'm hunting a different bird altogether.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Once I kind of felt that at all, Kentucky kind of came back to my mind last year, and I was like, you know what? Go take what the defense gives you. Don't feel like you got to hunt a certain way. You know, hunt your hunt, as Pierce says. And go have fun. And you know what? That's my quickest season ever. So,
awesome, man.
I'm pretty freaking jacked about it.
Yeah, that was really a very efficient use of your time. I was hunting that morning, and you texted our group pretty quickly that morning.
Yeah.
My wife was even like, because I waited a little bit to send her anything. I was almost to the truck. She's like, oh my God, already? And I was like, oh.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey guys, Rick here from the Mobile Hunter Podcast, and I'm here to tell you about one of our sponsors, Saddy's LLC, Custom Ammunition and Gunworks. Aaron Satterfield and his family have been turning out some awesome game loads that have been putting down deer, waterfowl, and turkey all year long. The Saddy's Fatty, the turkey load that we use, can stop a bird dead in its tracks. Check them out at SattiesLLC.com. That's SattiesLLC.com. Or on Facebook at Satties LLC and tell them the Mobile Hunter Podcast sent you.
So yeah, I told my wife, you know, I didn't send her anything right away. I was almost back to the truck and she's like, oh, already? And I was like, oh, you don't understand. I'm almost back to the truck. I'll be home soon. Like, it's not going to be, you know, noon or one or, you know, whatever. So she was pretty excited when I told her that. And of course I sent the kids the video and of the turkeys gobbling and everything. I think I sent that to you guys as well. And it, they're just, I think that's probably also what helped me a little bit too. Had those turkeys not gobbled at all and just pitched down, I think I probably would have still shot, but I would have probably been left pretty empty. Like, they gobbled a lot on the limb. It was pretty awesome. The other thing that really made me want to do that was to build a little confidence with my new gun. I've got a new setup. I was super excited about it. I wanted to put a bird down with a Saddy shell and just use the whole setup and just start to build the confidence and see what it'd do. I got to use the short barrel. So I got the new, for those that might not know, I bought a new Stevens 550. It's a 28 gauge. It's got a 28 inch barrel. I put the Meadow Creek mount on the vent rib, mounted the Burris Fast Fire 3 red dot to it, and I'm shooting the Saddy's Red Rockets. It's a 1.5 ounce load of 9.5s in a 2¾-inch shell. The gun doesn't even hold a 3-inch shell, and it's an over and under. So you're able to put your, you know, we use the Indian Creek turkey chokes. So I put that on the top barrel, the over barrel. And then in the under barrel, I used an improved modified so I could have a short and a long barrel. Kind of gives you an option if you got one in close. Well, I heard the spitting on the limb, the only noise I ever made was I flipped that freaking barrel selector over and was like, guess we're going short barrel today, guys. And the bird was 12 yards when I shot it. So he was super close and, you know, clean, ethical, quick kill. It was great.
Awesome, man.
So I want to go back to your roost hunting tactic, essentially. And like you said, how you learned it hunting with, you know, Luke and Matt and Aaron and that. As someone who is still relatively green to turkey hunting, I mean, I didn't start turkey hunting regularly until when did I hunt with you and Luke? 2019, 2020?
2020, I think.
Yeah.
Because it was the same year we couldn't hunt.
You were all in Ohio.
Yeah.
And then, like, that was the year. That's the year me and you woke up at like 1:30 to meet Luke way up north, and it was like 22 degrees. It was super cold.
Yeah, it was like November morning.
That was a suck wad, dude. I wish we had November mornings like that.
So, yeah. So since 2020, I've been. That's when I started hunting turkeys every year. Before then, I was not doing that. And since then, right, I feel like the most efficient thing I have found hunting on my own and with you is the roost hunting. And I mean, listening to these different people talk about hunting turkeys, you know, I mean, it's not like I agree with what you said. It's not an ideal turkey hunt, right? You like to like kind of watch them come in, call them, fan, like strutting the whole show, right? I mean, it was made really evident to me last year when we went to Kentucky and was done super fast out of state. And then I went to Indiana with Tyler Westall, and I was like, well, we know where they're roosting. We're just going to set up on them. Did the same thing. Now, we didn't do that the first day because we didn't know where they were roosting. But sure. The second day we did that, and mm-hmm. got it done. I mean, we doubled up.
Right off the roost, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Right off the roost.
How long had the birds been on the ground?
Maybe, I'm not going to say right off the roost, maybe 8 to 10 minutes, because okay. they pitched down, went to a creek, got a drink of water, and then came back to us.
Still.
Yeah, I mean,
I'd consider that right off the roost.
So. Oh, it's absolutely right off the roost. It's just not like they pitch down and zoom. Like when you watch, so we've all seen that video that Jacob Emery has where the turkey's gobbling and flies into his lap. I would have had that had I sat up against that other tree. That's mm-hmm. really what I wanted. Although I also wanted the opportunity to be able to cut and cackle and maybe make them gobble in front of the camera. I was not shooting in 120 though. Next time I may try it, because the one thing, and I don't mean to like cut you off or anything, but the one thing that blew my mind, like this is literally like, it's still gray light. Like it's still pretty damn dark outside when this bird comes down and I shoot him. It's probably, I would call it, it was overcast that morning and it was probably about 12 minutes after technical shooting light, legal shooting light or whatever. And, the reason I say 45 seconds is my season doesn't start until a bird's feet at least hit the ground. Mm-hmm. So that's where, and because I literally heard the first turkey fly down and it landed in front of me on film, I was able to time it perfectly. So that's where the 45 seconds comes from. But when I reviewed the video, I'm like, geez, oh shit, man, it looks like 9:30 in the morning. Like it looks super light. The camera collected so much light. And I thought, damn, I'm actually going to have to like kind of darken this up a little bit. Normally you're trying to lighten everything up because it's so freaking gray out still. And, damn, it was crazy. So I really think I could have got away with maybe shooting 120 frames per second and got that great super slow-mo kind of stuff, especially when you're at 12 freaking yards, dude. Like I don't even really have to zoom or do anything, which is also, you know, another reason why it was so light out, I think. So
yeah,
something to keep in mind for the future. But anyway, Josh, go ahead. You were talking about the roost tactics and everything.
No, I was just getting that. I mean, as someone who's still green, I think it's a very efficient tactic, and I don't know why. I mean, the purists don't like it, right? That's all I hear. And I'm like,
yeah,
this is 100% what I'm doing if I'm out of state every time.
Yeah. Well,
so, but I think that's the key is what kind of hunt do you want? Do you want, are you piling birds? Are you moving on to the next state? If so,
and how much time do you have?
Well, and how much time do you have? Like, if you have kids, or are you retired, or do you have all the time in the world because you take time off to turkey hunt?
And like, and are you somewhat of a pretty serious deer hunter as well? Because there's guys that take off a lot of time during turkey season that probably don't take as much during deer season because deer hunting isn't as big to them, or maybe they're not as successful at it, or they live in a region where it's not, they're not going to be hunting down a big buck. They're killing a 100-inch deer, 120-inch deer, and that's all they're going to get. So they really don't care. Plus they have rifle opportunities and everything else. So there's a lot of factors that come into that.
Yeah, I would agree.
At the end of the day, man, and here's the other thing though, people act like it's easy. Do you know how many times I've been able to find where turkeys consistently roost and set up? It's very rare that I actually find that. And I never found that on private land. It's not until I went to public land that I found it, which that's what I thought Josh was going to ask. Like, why the hell weren't you doing this before? And I'm like, bro, like I already had the answer in my head. Like, dude, I've never had turkeys roost.
They aren't roosted on that property.
I mean,
ever.
that's how it is at, you know, my dad's place where I've killed the past 3 years in Ohio. They don't roost there. They roost on the neighbors.
Yeah.
And I have to, like this year, try and coax them over the property line into the woods out of these fields, which is not easy.
Yeah. And the thing is, it looks super easy when it's easy. It's not it that, you know, when it works, it you look like a genius. When it doesn't work, you feel like a moron. You know, you don't always end up setting up right underneath the turkey and it pitches down. Hell, I've sat up and, you know, been right, and then the turkey flies 150 yards away and leaves and never comes back. I'm like, well, screw you, dude.
I said it last week. I set up, me and Bruce set up on a tree, and I'm calling, listening to gobblers, and not even paying attention. There was a hen in the tree above us. She pitched down freaking 15 yards in front of us and took off running. Like they, you know, if they're not making noises, you'll never know they're there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and with some of the goofy stuff that's happened this year, I mean, I saw a hen in a tree at 7:30, bright sunshine. We were at a WMA. What was in 2020? We saw a hen in a tree at 9 a.m. Like they do goofy things like that sometimes, and who knows why, but you know, it's just, it's different everywhere, but awesome that you got it done, man. Awesome. Yeah. And you're quick about it.
Thank you.
So Josh. Well,
So I was just going to go back to what Chris was saying about messing up, you know, hunting that way and then mess up. Like I said this last week, I did the same thing in Kentucky this year and didn't have it work. Right. Set up right on a gobbler on the roost, and he pitched down on the other side of a down tree and then walked away. And I have struggled in Kentucky ever since.
Super frustrating.
It is.
So it's one of those things, you know, it's kind of like bed hunting a buck though. It's super high risk and high reward. And there are times where you can hunt close to a buck's bed and he takes a different secondary ridge or a different trail or something spooks him or whatever. Shit happens. But the odds are with you more in this instance than pretty much any other that you can think of. So in my opinion and in my experience. So I figure, keep doing it until I feel like there's something smarter or this is stupid or, you know, whatever.
Or it loses its luster. Like that's part of it too. It might lose its luster. But again, if you're state hopping, it makes sense to do it that way. But it just does.
Yeah. I will say hunting that way, it was evident to me during the opening weekend of Ohio, but hunting that way, trying to get like find the roost and hunt them at the roost, it has made me really antsy and impatient, I feel.
Yeah.
Because when I was waiting around at my dad's, I'm like, I was getting very antsy and I'm like, I just want to move. Like,
this is taking so long.
Yeah. I've been sitting for like an hour. I'm like, okay, I'm done with this. I will say in some, like it does help sometimes. Like I went to a new place. What day was that? Last week. In Kentucky.
It was Wednesday last week.
I went to a new WMA, never turkey under there. We had scouted it for deer, had found some turkey sign. I had some turkeys on a trail camera in the fall. So it's like, oh, I'll go back to this general area where we saw some sign. I had the turkeys on camera. Didn't hear a gobble. And it was like 6:25. And I had, you know, hit some locator calls, did some aggressive cutting, like nothing. I'm like at the very far corner of this piece. So I got antsy. I'm like, man, I haven't heard anything. I need to book it before these birds hit the ground. So I book it a half mile points. I think it was 0.6 miles back to where I thought the most likely secondary location for these birds to be were, off of a creek system. And sure enough, get up there, I think I hit my crow call and bam, I hear the gobbles. So in that case, being kind of antsy and impatient did help some. I wasn't standing back there for no reason and waiting to hear nothing.
Right.
Move to make something happen. Now, those birds stayed just off the public. on some private up on a ridge above the public line, and I could do nothing. So I didn't kill a bird.
Which is how it goes sometimes.
Yes.
Unfortunately. So, what's from each one of you, what's one thing that you learned this season from turkey hunting?
Don't let a bird start flopping and get caught up in a cactus. You'll pick needles out of your ass for a week.
I like that one. Josh?
I'm trying to think. So one thing, like I said before, I'm still relatively green in comparison to a lot of people, but I feel like what I've picked up the past couple of years and what I feel like kind of was evident this year was kind of once you, I mean, it doesn't always work out this way, but like it, Ohio, for example, opening day, those birds move through a certain area, roughly around, you know, like nine or whatever, but I had a general pattern of their movement. So the very next day, I set up based off that pattern after only seeing it one time. And I was able to kill a bird off of that pattern. And then in Kentucky, that place we went to where I almost got a bird off the roost, the bird pitched away from me and walked away from me. And I set up where the bird was going to. Now, I think that would have worked 100% if there wasn't as much pressure on that location. There was a ton of pressure there. Because the birds weren't roosted in that spot anymore. They were literally just over onto the private, but in the same general area. But I think what I've learned is if you see a pattern or see them do something like off of a roost or have a general area where they like to go to, strut, gobble, all that stuff, like set up on it right away is what I feel like I learned.
Good deal.
I agree. And that's the thing too. Like, again, looks cool when a bird pitches right above you, right down to the ground. But if I'm close to the roost and they're, you know, 70 yards away and they pitch 25, 30 yards out of the tree toward me, that's a pretty cool hunt, especially if he starts strutting when he hits the ground and gobbles a few times and everything. And you maybe make a call and make him gobble and strut. And then, of course, you know, with the film, you might pick him up drumming or something too. Like, just super cool. So doesn't always work out as easily. I'll probably never have a season like that ever again in my life, honestly. But super cool to have had that experience and thankful that the bird, you know, not willingly, but gave its life so that I could eat and have a little fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good deal. I'd say the one thing I learned post is this is more of a point of information. Cut the crop open on your bird. It's going to tell you a lot of what they're eating. Mine was full of grasshoppers. Full of grasshoppers. And it's important to know that because you're going to know your food source for the birds around there, and you're going to be able to maybe hone in a little bit more on that kind of stuff as well. You know, crop content of a turkey tells you a lot about the health of the land and if they're spending time in the woods or if they're spending time in fields.
That's very intelligent.
Yeah. Instead of a feed tree for deer, you got a feed field for the turkeys that are like that field down yonder is full of them deer grasshoppers. That's where them turkeys will be.
Exactly.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, anything else this evening?
Rick, you kind of hit on it earlier about going into whitetail content after this.
Yeah. Week.
Do we want to give the listeners kind of an idea of some of the stuff that might be coming up?
Yeah. So we are going to be picking back up right after turkey. I don't know that it's next week, but it's coming up soon. We're going to finish the Anatomy of a Miss series out, and then we are going to roll into some new whitetail content, I believe, at the start of August, correct?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll have some before the expos and stuff. We'll have some various individuals from different companies and stuff on the podcast before the expos, and
yep,
we'll kind of explain a bunch of stuff about the expos on future episodes and what people can expect and try and all that stuff. And then we'll have a brand new Whitetail series beginning in August. That should be a pretty killer series. I'm a little biased because we are doing it, but I think it's going to be really good.
I think it's going to be excellent.
I think it'll be the best damn series done, honestly.
We recorded really episodes and Chris was very excited.
I'm jacked out of my mind. I'm pissed that I have to wait until August to re-listen to them.
So just so you're, if you're out there listening, we're going to have title content from sponsors of the expo are going to come on, tell us a little bit about companies, also talk whitetails with us. We're also through the summer going to be working on releasing some of the content from the expos, maybe not all of it because we can't give it all away for free, guys. We want you to come and experience an expo for yourself. It's truly an amazing event. One of the three, whether it's in Dalton, Georgia, Mannheim, PA, or Kalamazoo, Michigan, you're going to enjoy each and every one. And we have speakers at each one. And keep your eyes open over the next few weeks to a month. We're going to be announcing speakers, vendors, all that kind of stuff for you guys to be able to kind of plan your summers on coming there. And then as we roll into whitetail season, Josh has got a great series lined up for you all to listen to on your way summer scouting and on your way to the deer stand.
So hell yeah.
Hell yeah, man. Well, guys, this has been the Mobile Hunter Podcast. We've been your hosts, Rick Cates, Josh Luck, and Chris Leppert. Thanks for tuning in, and we will come back at you with those favorite mammals of yours next week. Talk at you later. Bye.
See you.
See ya.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's podcast. The best way you can support the podcast is by sharing online and with your buddies at Deer Camp. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram and leave us a 5-star review.